before I lose my voice, eating more food. I thought I'd share some thoughts with you. The cavitation of water, which is the correct way to call the boiling of water, because boiling implies the traditional method of the application of heat, which is very energy intensive, very costly energy wise. But John Warley Keeley figured out a way to cavitate water using very little energy at all, because he didn't just use a certain frequency piped through a tube or a funnel action, shall we say, to the center of his utensil, but that the shape of that utensil was the same shape as a bubble of cavitation. That's why he used a sphere. Because he was trying to... Because think of a gasoline engine. When the gasoline explodes in the piston, aren't the pistons cylindrical? They're cylindrical for a reason, except for the fact that the piston is reciprocating. So those two ends of the piston are flat. The rest of the piston is spherical for a reason. So that when the explosion occurs, if it were to occur at dead center of that cylindrical shape, it would hit all the sides simultaneously, come back, and echo in at the center and be focused. Well, that's what Keeley did. When he cavitates the water with the help of a certain frequency, he's channeling it through a funnel that points the frequency at the dead so that the frequency gets released into the water in the center of the chamber, not anywhere else, such as the edges or the sides. And all he has to do is get a single molecule to cavitate. He doesn't have to cavitate the entire chamber. We try to raise the entire chamber of a pot of water to the boiling temperature, which is a lot of energy. All he has to do is cavitate one molecule in the very dead center of that chamber. And when it does so, I'm sorry. See, I should have started talking sooner. And when he does so, that little cavitation event, that explosion of water into steam, sends a wave, a shock wave, outward from itself that hits the sides of the cylinder simultaneously everywhere at the same time, and then bounces back and hits dead center where he's feeding it again. Now, if that wave should hit the center at the same moment that he applies energy to cavitate his next bubble from a single molecule of water, he's now got double the energy as before. And if he keeps doing that, he's going to end up with very bubbly water. Now, he's also got a pressure cooker situation in which, as we know, when the pressure goes up, the temperature goes up. So instead of attempting to raise the temperature in order to boil water, to cavitate water, which effectively raises its pressure, and we know that in a pressure cooker, instead he raises the pressure, which effectively raises the temperature. And he's got it in an echo chamber so that the energy that he applies never dissipates. Doesn't go anywhere. It stays in the chamber. When we apply heat to the boiling water, it boils off. Now, in a pressure cooker, it doesn't. We still have to apply heat to get the entire chamber to boil, even though it's less because it's under pressure in a pressure cooker. But in his device, it's so little, it's pathetic, because he's pushing the child on the swing at the exact moment the child comes by. But unlike a child swinging on a swing, who loses energy as she swings due to friction, air resistance, this little chamber doesn't lose anything to speak of. It's formulated so highly efficient that, and then the approach that he takes of raising the pressure rather than the temperature to get the water to raise its temperature is unbelievable. It's uncanny. the way this guy thought, talk about a genius. He thought in such a manner that so this kind of analysis is maybe the only way to look at it. Why did he create a sphere? We know that everything has its resonant frequency. That's nothing new. We know that. It's common knowledge. But why a sphere? And this always, you know, bothered me, you know, why is a sphere? It's because he's creating a macroscopic geometry for the microscopic event to be in resonance with the two. So geometry is important. So if he's going to cavitate a spherical bubble, he wants his chamber to be a spherical bubbly shape. And he's going to want to create the cavitation at dead center at the exact moment that the echo returns so that the energy builds. So he's pulsing a certain frequency in there. He's not just sending in a certain frequency, he's pulsing it. So the timing is important. The density of water is important. So if you go to a different elevation, the density is going to be different. So you have to use a different diameter chamber. Or you have a mechanism that adjusts itself to the altitude by changing the pulse rate so that it doesn't pulse at the same rate as when you were at sea level. Or if you were at the bottom of the ocean trying to boil a pot of coffee in one of these undersea laboratories or whatever they're called. So this is really an uncanny, simple invention. And I don't know if he patented it or not, quite frankly, but nobody's really dissected it and analyzed it. But with that kind of dissection, it wouldn't take much for somebody to say, okay, well, what's the resonant frequency of water? People already know that. It's common knowledge among people who study the matter. I don't. I just took this story that is told and passed around the internet, and it's taken me, what, like a decade to figure out why it's a sphere, what the significance is. It's very important. Because if you don't understand the significance of the spherical shape, you want to understand how it ties into the rest of the story. It's probably on Keeley.net or Keeley.net.com, I believe is the website, URL. Wherever it was somewhere I read about it, and it really impressed me. Because the guy worked in sound. Everything he did was based on sound. He literally made a humongous cannonball. It was so huge and heavy out of solid steel, so weightless he could move it around because he knew how to use sound to do it. It's unbelievable. I mean, I joke to myself privately whenever Franco Bruno Cortelletti talks about the use of sound waves to bounce stones up onto the side of a cliff from the bottom of the at the base of the cliff. Because I'm thinking to myself, yeah, right, it's just a story. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Maybe it's not a story. Maybe it's true. I mean, it's not a fiction as you tell as a bedtime story to your children to amuse them. It's starting to sound very true. Because they have to bounce the echo off the wall of the cliff. And they have to, and it has to be a curved cliff wall acting like a parabolic dish, so that it bounces the sound wave back to the point of origin. So it starts sounding like, this is really cool. It might even be where Keeley got his original inspiration for this device, was that story of getting rocks to fly. Oh, Franco. Boy, how, you see, and if I count you as my friend, but how come I don't? Well, because I'm not a person who succumbs to faith. I have to admit it. If my intellect doesn't have a rational explanation, I don't accept it. I don't buy it. And so that's probably why people have a hard time with free energy. They don't buy it because they don't understand the lie called Ohm's Law is a lie. It doesn't exist. It's a fiction. anyway, I won't get off on another topic, but anyway. So unless we can reason about something and really get it, we really don't know. And it really takes inspiration because it just hit me, you know. while I'm eating dinner. That's why I'm coughing, because I always develop this cough while eating. But I got all so full of it. I got to talk about. See, now I cleared my throat and I'm not coughing anymore. But then I'm going to go back to eating when I get done with this recording. So I thought I'd share it with you right away. Almost right away. I waited a little too long. Because I think it's so cool. Sound works miracles. And, you know, I know the Ankh device, A-N-K-H, it has something to do with levitating the stones from the quarry to Giza, where it was put together, assembled into a pyramid. And it was a priestly duty to move those stones. And it only took one priest to do it. And it, according to Edgar Cayce, it took 100 years to build the damn thing, probably because there was only one priest doing it. But back in those days, it was the Treta Yuga, where the average lifespan was 1,000 years. And if you're a priest, it's going to be a little more than average, because you're going to have access to knowledge that the rest of the population does not possess. But in any case, I always wondered what that Ankh is. I always assumed it was electromagnetic in its operation, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was sonic in its operation somehow. How? I can't imagine, but now I'm thinking about, you know, Keeley and Franco, and I was like, maybe they figured out how to use sound to move those stones from the quarry, and maybe that's how they blasted the stone out of the quarry in the first place, by using sound. It might be why there are three vertical columns on the Ankh, each one's to serve a different purpose. One for levitating, the one that points out away from the person's body and is parallel to the loop that he holds. And the other two, the one facing up and the one facing down, must have some other purpose that has to do with maybe one of them at least having to do with quarrying the rock in the first place. You know, I don't know. It's it's really remarkable, you know, that they built the Giza Pyramid in the first place, but maybe they used sound. Now, according to Edward Leetskalnin, he claimed he figured out how they built the pyramids, but from what we know, he didn't use sound. He used electromagnetism of some kind or type. He had gizmos rigged up in his shack and wire going from the shack up through the pulley down to the stone that he was attempting to make weightless so that he could just easily hoist it up on a block and tackle, and I don't know. It's phenomenal how he did things, but we don't know. But if he translated, and sound is mechanical, and Tesla worked in mechanical engineering as well as electrical, because he claimed, I think, if I have my story correct from where I found it, unless somebody else said this. No, I think it was him. He believed that electrodynamics is nothing more than mechanical dynamics, but at the atomic level, so that if you understand mechanical engineering, you'll understand electrical. And there are analogs. They've made tables on the internet for making drawing an analogy between springs and mass and capacitors, inductors, you know, so it is possible to do the translation. But I never thought of mechanical engineering have anything to do with sound, but it has everything to do with sound. Sound, that's nothing but mechanical engineering when dealing with sound waves. So, wow, it is possible to do sonically whatever we do electrically could be done with sound. Isn't that? And then, of course, we have the, Joshua and the trumpets, and he brought the walls of Jericho down. He marched around it, and then he blasted the trumpets, and the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. And we made a song out of it, a nursery rhyme, so that they could invade the land of Canaan and take over. So it's interesting. I don't know what more to say, but it's definitely an interesting topic.